Raised Rowdy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Raised Rowdy Podcast.
Yeah. Today.
You got to say your name.
My name is Colby Aka.
My name is Kurt Ozon.
And I'm Nick Tressler. And we are here with our good brother, Colby, as he said, to talk about the podcast that we messed up the last time we tried a podcast.
Yeah, we had some technical difficulties, but we're back.
Yeah.
So back.
We recorded for like 3 or 4 hours, and we did DMT and aliens, and then that didn't save, so we had to do it again.
Yeah. No DMT or aliens this time, though. but we have it turned, so I can see if it goes off now,
okay.
Which is good.
There we go.
All right, let's music talk.
Yeah.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for coming back. Sorry it didn't work, and sorry to waste your time, but we love you.
No, it's good to be back. I love you guys much. Sorry, yes. You were like leaning in so much that I was leaning in, and it was scaring me.
Yeah, just follow your heart, dude.
Okay.
We'll it's never there. A waste of time when you get to hang out with your dear friends.
Valid.
Agreed. Well, let's dive into some music things and friendship things. So, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
When's the last time that we had you on the pod? Was it for your last record?
Yeah.
For American Son?
I believe so, yeah.
We did the like two triple-ish pod.
That's
double
right.
Pod.
I do
long
remember that.
Pod.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Tinfoil hat pod.
Yeah, dude. Well, that was the, yeah, we put it out. We recorded them all at the same time, just a bunch, and then we put them out separate. And then you've since been on Matt's pod as well,
correct,
talking about the new record.
Yeah.
Yay, Matt.
Yeah. So he's down in St. Lucia right now, which you know, a little envious of, but we're going to Key West.
We're going to Key West, yeah. We're
going
to go
to... I'm not going to either, so...
Yeah.
Damn.
You did just get married, though, so it's like, it evens out.
True, yes.
Congratulations on that.
Big perk, thank you very much.
Yeah. Where did you guys go on your honeymoon?
We haven't gone on a honeymoon yet, but we're probably going to go to Hawaii.
That sounds great.
In due time.
When? I mean, now's pretty good, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah, now is a great time. I know. Probably in the next year.
Okay.
Or so.
I like Hawaii. I've never been there, but it looks cool on the internet.
It is very fun. I've been a couple times. It's a good place to go. I've only been to Maui. I haven't been to other islands, but
Maui, Wowie.
Yeah, we played a gig there with Luke like way back in the club days, and it was so much fun. And we had a couple days off also. And one night we all went to a bar like as a band, and no one's gonna, you know, suspect that, you know, Luke, who's playing a show, is like gonna be at a bar. And so we're at this bar, outdoor kind of spot, really nice, and we were really getting after it, the boys, you know? And I forget who it was, but somebody, not me, probably, hopefully not, kept putting Luke's music on the jukebox, and then people realized that he was here, and we all, like, had to leave because, like, it would just became a huge meet-and-greet line.
Boss was super happy, I'm sure.
No, yeah. He's like, all right, I'm going home. Like, oops.
Like, the one place in the United States of America that people wouldn't give him crap.
Yeah, we ruined it. It wasn't me, though. It was Jake. Just kidding.
I'm sure it was you.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else in that band probably wouldn't do that.
No.
The funniest part would be if he was just like, oh, no, people say that all the time. I'm actually a Luke Combs impersonator. Like, that would be funny.
It's actually, weirdly enough, not, you know, obviously that it's like that. But we got done with a show in Alabama this year.
Mm.
And I was in the back of the club talking to my photographer. And this guy walks up to me and he taps me on the shoulder. He's like, hey, man, are you Colby? And I just walked off stage.
Yeah.
And I go, actually, no, this guy is. And my photographer is 6'7". We do not look alike. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, okay, cool. And so he turns and starts talking to Ben, my photographer. And I just like dipped out around the back.
I've done that actually. When we were on the Brantley tour, when I was playing for Michael Ray, we would always go out after the shows, you know, me, Michael, Kanan Smith, and like some of Brantley's band and stuff. We'd just go to a bar and grab a couple beers before last call. And someone came up to me and they're like, you were so good on stage. And I was like, thank you. Thank you so much. And she's like, I just love your voice. And I'm like, yeah. And then I realized she thought I was Kanan, and Kanan's standing right next to me. And I just went with it. Totally same thing. I'm like, oh yeah, thank you for, you know, being a fan and supporting. And
well, I never expect
bought me a beer
to get recognized.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't. And mm-hmm. We were just driving back from Oklahoma. We did a duck hunt out there, me and Ben again. And we walk into this gas station, middle of nowhere, Oklahoma. And I'm getting gas. I go in, get a fried chicken sandwich and some food. And I'm not looking super great. I'm looking a little haggard, you know. Mm-hmm. just early mornings. And so I'm sitting in the truck while it's gassing up, eating this chicken sandwich. And while Ben's walking out, this guy in a truck pulls up, rolls down the window. Ben's wearing my hat. And he's like, hey, is that, and Ben's like, yeah, that's Colby. Do you want to say hi? And I have no idea this is going on. So the truck door opens, my passenger side, and I'm just sitting there eating a chicken sandwich, just mowing down on grease. Ben's like, hey, dude, this guy's a fan. And I'm like, hey, dude, what's going on?
Brutal.
This luxurious gas station chicken sandwich is awesome.
But what do you expect from me as well?
Yeah.
You know?
It's on brand. It's your dime breed.
Man,
for yeah. sure.
What's actually funny, the two last times I've been recognized were both at a gas station. And the one before that, it was actually, I think, right before I came here to do our first podcast. But there's a gas station just right next to my house, our house.
Mm-hmm. We live together.
Down there on that corner.
You guys make out all the time. Oh, no, wait.
He's married, dude.
But I walked down there to get Zins. And there's a guy in front of me at the counter. And it's 9:30 in the morning. And he's buying a six-pack of Coors Banquet. And as he leaves,
yeah.
he kind of looks me like up and down and kind of goes like that. And I'm like basically in my pajamas. So I go up by my log of Zins. And as I'm walking out, the guy is getting in his truck with the six pack. And he's up on top out the window or out the door. And he goes, hey, are you Colby Acuff? I'm like, oh, God. Yeah. He's like, dude. Big fan of your music.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Who's buying six pack at the gas station?
That's your demo is people that eat at gas stations, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
Drink at 9 a.m.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's yeah. the working class, dude. That's yeah, that's yeah. what it is.
Man of the people.
Man of the people.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I love it.
I think that's great. No, I've had people recognize me and I'm not even famous, like while I'm at a show being a fan. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm just here drinking. Like, I'm no one.
Yeah, but you always wear your stuff, too.
Sometimes. Sometimes I don't now.
I do like the hat, though.
Yeah, it is a great hat.
You guys got great merch.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
We're working on making it even better.
You got good merch, too. I was going to wear my Colby shirt today, but then I had left the house and I forgot.
It's okay, man.
Yeah. He still loves you.
I'm wearing 49 today.
Yeah, that's true.
Shout out to the boys.
Hell yeah. Well, we need to get them on the pod, too. That'd be fun. Okay, so you had a really good 2025. Marriage.
Yes.
Done.
Yeah,
Whitney. Frank, he's involved. All's well at the homestead.
Frank is a dog, by the way, not a child.
Yes, or another lover.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. Well, should we dive into the record? Or
sure.
Yeah.
We don't have to if you guys don't want to.
Yeah, music's the important part about a podcast about music interviews.
Okay, so 2025, you released yet another record.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I feel like in my head, you're still a young man because I'm older than you. You have a lot of music out.
Yeah, I mean, we've been... It's funny, though. I mean, I feel like I put out a record every year. We have a ton of songs out.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it's still hard to keep up. Like, the output right now within the market is absolutely crazy. I mean, so many people are releasing so much music.
Right. Obviously, artists individually are releasing more music than they used to, but also they're just more artists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, look at the New Music Friday posts. I mean, it's like three carousel slides
right.
yeah.
of art.
And that's just the people that like are on the radar of that place.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think it's 100,000 a day get uploaded to Spotify, I believe is the stat.
And now with the robots, it's going to be exponentially bigger.
I mean, it's pretty polluted with that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. But, you know.
Well, I think that because there are robots out there making music, now is the most important time to sort of put out real, authentic stuff.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I love the way that you and Eddie work together, your producer. Thank you. I think you guys do work in maybe like unusual way that you guys do stuff.
Yeah.
In that there's a lot more care and time taken to do things in the way that I consider maybe the more organic or more correct way.
Yeah.
And I remember when you put out Western White Pines, how great it sounded, and then you were talking about how you wanted to do each record, and Eddie, too. It was sort of like, we want to record every record differently. And I think it was with Western White Pines, it was like, the focus was like on the vocals and drums first, and then everything else afterwards. Did you guys take a different approach to enjoy the ride when you were recording it?
Yeah, I think it's so funny, because I think from the... how it feels making records, at least the last four ones that I've made, mm-hmm. it actually kind of feels like we've made them similarly, That's not how you say that. That's not how you say that word.
Close enough for government.
Synonyminin. But yeah, no, like I think we've made them fairly in a similar way. But for like Western White Pines, for example, the whole thing that we wanted to do was try and get like a live sound. Mm-hmm. And then American Sun is the one that we did drums and vocals first.
Okay, yeah.
And then we built around that. This record, though, like with Enjoy the Ride, the interesting piece for this record wasn't so much actually how we made it. It was more the concept behind it.
Yeah.
And so this Enjoy the Ride for me in my catalog, especially now that it's been out for a while. For me, when I look back on my catalog and I look at that record was a piece of me trying to figure out what people wanted, I guess. And then it was a little bit of an artistic experiment for Eddie and myself as well. That record, like we went out and we interviewed a bunch of people about their lives and who they were and how they interacted with the world and what they thought and what they felt. And I put that into art essentially to try and, you know, connect with people in that way. And I think the way that we made it was actually just like, all right, well, the song is telling the story of another person. And so when we service the song, it should be, we wanted it to be fairly simple in what it was.
Yeah. I remember, we discussed this on the last pod that got deleted, but you said that it didn't get deleted. It just never got recorded. You and Eddie actually went on a road trip, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So give us a little bit of that whole story about how you came up with this idea and how you executed it.
It was actually kind of Eddie's idea, but it was, it happened quick. I think coming out of American Sun is just like a deeply personal record. And while it is meant to connect with other people, it comes from a place of pain and a lot of stuff that happened in my life when I was 27 years old. And coming out of that, I just couldn't get out of it. I couldn't stop writing that way. And I wanted to stop. And I think the breakout for that cycle was Eddie was like, hey, we don't know what we want to make next. So why don't we go talk to people instead of sitting in a room guessing, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one way or another, the thing for Enjoy the Ride with me is, one, I think artistically it connected me with people, not even fans, people, because nobody that we interviewed knew who the hell I was. And so connecting me and getting out of Nashville a little bit and going and talking to people, the working class and so on, especially because, you know, we went to North Carolina 2 weeks after the Helene situation as well. So that we were like right in that deal. And it was amazing how positive those people were and like how strong that community was. So that, I think for me, that got me out of that little bubble that I was in artistically. And it was just a nice like break of the cycle for me.
I love that.
Yeah.
Good.
I was just going to say, one of the things that like you and I have discussed off pod is sort of like you were thinking going in that you would maybe write a song about each person's story and how you're like, oh, maybe this guy, he's, you know, the 9 a.m. gas station beer drinking guy. Why is he drinking so early? What's his story? And so you came up with some questions and you were asking folks. And then I remember you saying, like, the more I asked people like the same questions, I got the same answers.
Yeah, so kind of the original thought was I was going to ask a bunch, like 40 people. We were going to interview as many people as we could. We ended up with 40. And I was going to try and write 10 or 11 songs about 10 or 11 individuals. But the problem is that when we got about halfway through the interview process, there's about 10 or 12 of the questions that everyone answered 100% exactly the same, almost with the same vernacular. And that's when I was like, okay, everyone, like no one's as different as we all think they are. And we all want the same outcome. Like everybody wants the outcome of good. We all have different thoughts and feelings of how we're going to get there. But it became very aware to me that like, okay, well maybe the move is to write 10 or 11 songs within a concept record that follow these two characters that can kind of reach and pull from these 40 interviews to like give a common goal.
One of my favorite things from the, again, pocket that didn't make it was that you're talking about like one of the questions you asked was, what is your vision of a perfect day?
Yeah.
And then you asked me this and I said, well, I would wake up and I would make a cup, you know, make a pot of coffee, you know, maybe hang out with my friends, you know, hang out with my girlfriend, play some guitar, maybe have a cigar, listen to good music, whatever, jam, and then that's it. Which is basically already what I do every single day, but the difference being it's like I'm just with my friends and family more, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we would ask these people, like, what does your day look like? And they would kind of gripe about it. And they'd be like, oh, I got to wake up and go to work. And, like, then, you know, I come home and, like, I got to, like, do this and that. And I just go to bed and I wake up and I just rinse and repeat. And then, yeah, it's like, what is your perfect day? And like, well, probably, like, wake up, drink some coffee, probably go to work and come home, see my girlfriend or my wife and see my friends. You know, that's, like, probably a perfect day. It's like, dude, it's the life you already live.
Yeah.
So it's like being thankful for what you have was such a big takeaway because, I mean, honestly, I can be kind of, you know, I can be a little tough as well in that same way. I take a lot of things for granted and I personally forget sometimes to live in the moment. And I think so much about the future. I really don't ever think about the past, but I really think about the future a lot. And I think sometimes I can get in that same loop as well. And so hearing people talk about it and then me watching person after person after person after person say that same exact thing, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's almost like therapy a little.
Dude, talking to strangers about, and it's also, it was amazing how people were just like, if they went, they were like, oh, maybe I'll agree to do this. And then when they agree to do it, dude, they just open up. We thought that these interviews were going to take 10 minutes. Average person was 30 minutes. Just unloading.
Yeah.
Did you have any like trepidations about going up to strangers and talking to them? Like, were you nervous to do it at first? I feel like I would be.
I was very nervous. Eddie was like, not at all. So he's like, let's go. And so he was really good at handling that. And I mean, but I don't know. Like, it was easier with bartenders and, you know, your waiter. People that like you had built a little bit of a rapport with mm-hmm. while you're eating or hanging out mm-hmm. and then kind of diving into that. And some, there's only a couple people that said no. One of them was actually so interesting, was a record shop. We walk into a record store and we're like, hey man, we're making a record off of people's stories. Like, it's a cool album concept thing. Would you want to be a part of it? And he's like, no, go away. It's like, okay.
What?
Yeah. I was like, cool.
Was that your pitch? I was going to ask you that.
No, I mean, like, our pitch was essentially like, hey, it was like that. Like, it was either like, hey, I'm an artist, this is my producer, or hey, I'm a producer, this is the artist I'm working with. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to make a record about people's lives and trying to get closer with people. And so we're just interviewing people. Would you want to be a part of this? And we're just being honest. And, some said, I mean, most 99% said yes. And only a few people said no.
That's so funny that you, the person you thought would be like, yeah, that's interesting, I'm very passionate about music, I sell it for a living,
right,
it was just like, no, get the hell out of here.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, you never know what's going on with people's lives. And a lot of people, as you said, the interesting part was how much they opened up after you opened that door.
Yeah.
How often do you really get to talk about yourself?
Never.
Yeah, in your day-to-day life. You're talking about the things you're doing, but you never get to talk about yourself.
Damn, that's so true.
And it'd be like totally acceptable. Even like this situation. Like, if I just unloaded everything in my life on this podcast, it would seem insane.
Yeah.
Right? And so like this situation is such like a thing where we're like, hey, no strings attached. This will never, you know, this will only be used as reference material.
Yeah.
Tell us. And some of the interesting things also was like, we would talk to somebody, say they're like an employee somewhere, and they'd have to ask their boss if it was okay for them to take a 5-minute break to have this conversation. So 20 minutes later, you know, we're in it, and they kept being, and like their interview is great because they are like the working class, the epitome of like what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And then they'd be like, yeah, but I'm not that interesting. This is who you should really talk to. They'd bring that up multiple times. And we'd be like, okay. And so we'd go talk to that person, and that person was not interesting at all. They were just opinionated. They weren't, they were just somebody who was always super vocal about what they thought. So then this person, who doesn't ever get to talk about themselves, thought that they were uninteresting. That was another thing that I took away that I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Happened multiple times. It's a very wild situation.
I mean, it makes sense. I remember being in high school, we went to like a free enterprise week you know, like young business people kind of learning from other business professionals. And that's one of the things that I came out of that with, being a ADHD BC student at that point. I came out of that with like, okay, the person that has the best idea might not even be talking because they don't have the room in the room to talk. And also myself, as someone who was underachieving at that point, didn't have any worse ideas than the people that were getting straight A's.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, but there's like a weird social cred.
Yeah.
That exists, that...
Especially in high school, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I think it exists today.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I really do. I think it's... But regardless, yeah, I mean, looking at... It was a three-day road trip. Talked to 40 people. It was kind of a grind. But when you go back and... I went back and listened to the interviews in November, October, when we dropped vinyl. Mm-hmm. Because we did... we took 40 quotes throughout the interviews and put them on 40 of the vinyls and did a limited run of 40 for 40. And the quotes are amazing. You know, it's like these people, yeah, like, and I had kind of forgotten about them. So like when I show up to write them on the vinyl, we had had all the best quotes listed out. And as I'm reading them, I'm just like, geez, like these are electric.
Like, yeah.
Are those still available?
No, we sold them out the first day. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You're like, no, idiot.
Well, no, I mean.
Well, that's really special, man. That's so different, too, because who else is doing anything like that? What a unique experience, I feel like.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I mean, you know, that piece for me is, it might not be the most important piece in my entire discography, but for me as an artist, it was an extremely important piece for me to just do that, to find a new thing. Even if it's like, it has pieces of records past, and maybe that's a sound I'd never touch again, but it was a piece that gave me at least that experience so that I know where to go next, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard when you, because there are moments, I mean, within the artistry, with the highs and the lows and everything, the hardest piece is actually direction and feeling like you have to keep up with things, or you have to do this and you have to do that. That is so sick when you are like, I know exactly what I need to be doing. That is so hard to do if you don't know.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of where I was coming out of 2024. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
And doing this record and like sort of finding what you needed to do from other people is also maybe going to inform where you go next.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And I think, yeah, funny enough, I mean, I actually just recorded a new record in December. And so there will be obviously new music this year.
Is it done?
It's done. Yeah, it's delivered, mastered and everything.
I don't know. You were that far along.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, this is one of those things where I got in December, we made it, and I mean, this would probably be the first place that comes out with this knowledge on here. But yeah, I mean, because of Enjoy the Ride, really because of American Sun and Enjoy the Ride, I got a lot of clarity on what I wanted to do next. And really all of 2025 gave me a lot of clarity on what I wanted to do next.
How so?
Really, we played a ton of festivals. This is just kind of the honest truth, is we played a lot of festivals, and I got to see how other people do it. I think in the 3 years I've been here, the 3 years that we've been doing like the nationwide touring stuff, while I have seen a lot of acts, I haven't played like, I mean, I think we played 10, 11 festivals this summer, and they were all pretty big ones. And so I got to watch a ton of music and pick my favorites of how I want to do things, and kind of find the holes of, oh, I haven't seen this cool thing that I really enjoy. Or maybe I saw one person do it and I'm like, okay, well, that seems unsaturated. That's not a bad place for me to go if I want to go that route.
So do you think your next record will be more informed by the live show than maybe like a cool creative idea like interviewing people?
Yeah. So I've made plenty of records This yeah. is, I'm trying to say this in a way that sounds good. I've made a lot of records where the sole purpose was to serve the song and the people that it was intended for. And I did that for essentially two records, and I love those two records. But going forward, if I just had to be 100% honest, like I think that the folk music vein is super saturated, and I do love folk music, but I also love like country music and traditional like 70s outlaw vein and rock and roll and that kind of stuff. And I'm not seeing a ton of it, and it's probably by far none my favorite style of music. And our live show is a little bit more on the rock side anyway. And so I decided, okay, 2026, I would like to kind of find the lane that I'm going to chase, I think, for the foreseeable future. And so I'm going to go down more of that rabbit hole, I think. And I don't think it'll sound super unfamiliar, but I definitely think people will be like, oh, wow, okay, this is something that makes sense. And I feel like it's a place where I personally will always find direction, if that makes sense.
Cool, so maybe more rockin', electric guitar, phasers,
yeah,
shit like that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking production-wise.
Well, yeah. And I think... having seen your live show, like you're talking about, when your live show has that in it, and it sounds like from talking to you that it's going to lean even heavier that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a lot of stuff that I think people forgot about sonically, yeah. Honestly, that we accidentally is the wrong word, but we landed on to avoid doing one thing. We landed on this thing, this sound that I do feel like it spans a couple different spectrums. But I think it's a sound that a lot of people maybe have forgotten, and yeah. Not in like a, they still listen to it all the time, but maybe stuff that you don't think about as often.
Makes sense.
Cause everyone's trying to go down this one vein. And you know, I mean, I, once again, like I've done multiple different things in my career. But it's not as exciting if I feel like everyone, if I'm in the same trench as everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting to say like, okay, let's do like a rebrand. Let's do this and that and the other thing. And let's take a risk and do something that's a little bit more like in our vein anyway, the things that we've been trying to do. And why do these two things not work? Well, it's because this is this way and this is this way. You know, if that makes any sense, that sounded a little bit like ADHD spiral, but... trying to get those things to have more of a convenient merge.
Sounds like you're interested in carving your own path while sort of circling back and being more true to yourself.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Like what you really love.
Well, and I think it's hard, man. I mean, I think like
totally.
I'm definitely not. I am not a one track mind at all. I am like all over the place, mm-hmm. And most people, or at least I would say for sure, this used to be the thing where you were 19, 20, 21 years old, you're like, I want to be a musician. I'm going to move to Nashville. You move to Nashville, you have whatever, 5 to 10 years in this town to figure out who you want to be. And then if you're lucky, it hits, but you know who you are. I moved to town at 25, I jumped straight into it, made 4 records in my first 3 years essentially here. And then now I'm like, all right, we've done this, that, and the other thing. We've played all these shows. We've done these. We've been on these tours. Mm-hmm. All right, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Here we go. I've arrived.
Well, and honestly, I mean, you talk about that. Like a lot of people, if you're digging in the trenches writing songs before you get out and play real shows, you have a lot of time to do that. I think a big part of what you have is, I think you had a pretty good idea of who you were when you got to town.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking to other people that were a similar age spot than you were,
yeah,
when they moved to town. But I think from being your friend, being around you throughout this process, you really even found out more about yourself in that span.
Yeah. I can't remember. It might've been one of you two I was talking about. This was off pod as well, but it was talking about the difference between turning 25 and then being on the breaking edge of 30 and being like, if you know who you are when you're 25, that's you're ahead of the curve quite a bit.
Bro, totally. I had no idea who I was when I was 25.
Yeah, same.
But whoever I was talking to, it might not have been you too. But then they're like, but then when you are on the precipice of turning 30, the realization you're going to have is there's a whole nother piece for this next chapter that you didn't know who you were as well. So like, mm-hmm. It's also relearning all that and trying to, because I am not the same person I was when I was 25 or 22 for that matter, even though I feel like I did have a little bit more of a grip on who I was than maybe other guys in their early 20s or people in their early 20s. But I think because of that, then I think I did struggle with direction, who I was in my late 20s. I think that was like a totally different thing of me trying to, grab at something that was no longer there. For me personally, this doesn't even have to do with music, I feel like.
Yeah.
But, now, once again, like I think going from the last 2 years to now, I feel very equipped to do whatever the next thing is. And I think that's just life.
Yeah.
I don't think that's like, that's obviously not just me, but.
So for this new record, like thematically, I know you haven't gone on a road trip or anything. Is it sort of more of like the Colby stuff with a little bit of politics, a little bit of beer drinking in there, or like what's the vibe for it? Because I'm getting kind of hyped for it.
Yeah. No, it's what I would call 70s country.
Okay.
With 80s rock. That's like that's the span.
Okay. So when we talk 80s rock, as someone who, Metallica is my favorite band, are we talking like hair metal, like Colby?
We're talking probably like
Bob Seger.
Seger.
Okay.
Seger is exactly the best thing to describe it. Yeah. Probably more in the Seger vein. So maybe like early 80s, late 70s rock. Mm-hmm. But it hits on that. It definitely, for me, like this is an interesting topic, but I don't listen to my own music pretty much at all.
Yeah. That makes sense.
That being said, I will do one listen through once a year of Western White Pines because I love that record.
Sick as fuck, dude. Duh.
But I actually can't stop listening to Masters for this record. Like I love it. Which for me, that is like my first, like, okay, if I am in love with this record, that's a great thing for me. Like whether or not that is received or not, I am super proud of this product. But yeah, there's a little bit of politics involved in it. Not so much like the grandiose politics of things, but this is like my, I think even like when I was writing a lot of like the greater politics stuff that I was writing, I think I was still hiding a ton of shit that I didn't want to say yet. And this record, this is my experience. This is a record about the songs that are about me are about my experience of how I got to this point. And then the songs that are not about me are your beer drinking songs or a little bit more of like tales of my past about that 22-year-old, more or less. And so, but it is as country as, it's the most country record I've ever made.
Let's go, bro. Yeah, I'm excited.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, I remember it might have been us talking at some point, but you said like this might be the one.
I think so.
Yeah, or it might even been in media I was reading.
I hope so.
Could be at Shulman's when we were like,
well, yeah,
70,
yeah.
70 big beers in.
Yeah.
Whether or not it is, this is actually, I'm sure after I had a few beers, I told you that. And I do believe that. But whether this is the one or not, this is the direction.
Yeah.
Right? So like I made this record. I go, bing, aha, like this is it.
Yeah,
I'll chase the sound as long as I can.
And honestly, as like a fan, I love that. And that makes me think to like Muscadine Bloodline.
Absolutely. Right?
A band like Muscadine was making great music. And then I think they found what makes Muscadine Muscadine.
Yes.
And they even talk about having a whole record that they realized wasn't them at that point, and they just shelved it. They said, we're not putting it out.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't them. And they were like, now we know the journey we want to go on. Sonically, how we want to like live, and they went down that road, and that of course is going to adjust throughout the years in each record, but that's part of it.
Oh, it's crazy. It's wild sometimes when I go back and I listen to, like, very rarely, but let's say I have to go back and listen to something off If I Were the Devil, I am like, it doesn't even register that it's me.
That's fine.
It's interesting.
It's like, wow, who is that?
I know sometimes, like, when we have podcasts on, like, we had Lee and St. Vincent come on.
St. John.
Lee and St. John, thank you. I was, like, listening to his catalog, and I'm like, there's a very clear difference, like, songwriting-wise, from when he was younger to his, you know, Man of the North record. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, the same with you, and same with Luke, and same with every artist, you know, and even, like, Metallica. You know, it's like, if you compare some of their more complex stuff on Justice versus like Kill 'Em All or any artist, really, it's just part of growing up. Mm-hmm.
My biggest takeaway from this year is that
St. Vincent, goddamn.
My biggest takeaway artist this year in 2025, the growth that I came to be, is whether or not friends, family, people, whatever, agree or disagree with what you're feeling, you have to write that. Mm-hmm. It's people know when you're lying and they can feel it. And especially me, when I go back and listen to something, and I'm not going to say what tracks and whatnot, mm-hmm. and what off what records and whatnot, but if I go back and listen to a song and I can just hear myself lying through the microphone, then that's a song that I wish I, you know, and I don't really have anything that I would take back that I have released. I love everything I've released. But for example, when I listen to this record now, the conviction behind the microphone that I have on this record is very palpable because I played into that. The thing, whatever I was feeling when I wrote these songs is the same thing I was feeling when I sang them.
It's almost like artists are like an onion, and each record you're sort of peeling back a layer and getting closer to the heart of it all, maybe.
Yeah, no, it's more like Shrek. We're the sun. It's a very large... It's tough because artists, we'll never really know who we are.
That's weird.
Because we're...
That's people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we just... It's hard, though, because the other side of it is the closer you are to finding it, kind of the further you are away, meaning that I think really great art comes from you being close to the center. But when it takes off and it's big and all of a sudden you are known, so like if you turn the faucet on super high and you're like super famous, that brings more challenges into finding the center.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of yeses that come along. There's a lot of things that pull you away, distract you, and isolate you. And that is a very hard way to find center.
I think that's a challenging part. And I mean, honestly, in my daily life, like, I struggle with the things that made me fall in love with music becoming less and less of my daily life, right?
Yeah.
But I don't have an expression that every year I'm releasing 12 to 15 songs talking about that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
so you guys, while you're going through struggles like that, that I think is common with people, you have a outlet, and you have to take your heart and put it outside of your body and show it to people, you know?
Yeah, and I think the cycle that you got to be careful of is when you show people what you're feeling and they don't necessarily, let's say they don't care. We'll just use that as like a general vernacular, but let's say you show them and they kind of, it doesn't really connect. That is a tough feeling that you kind of got to just work through, because that can be something of like, oh, you just completely, you know, I feel very invalid.
Yeah.
Because the whole purpose of like you being able to express it is to say like, hey, I'm not alone, right? And then if they're like, no, you're alone, it's a tough feeling.
Yeah.
But you got to go through it. I mean, everybody does.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the whole thing.
I think as an artist, and as we've gotten to interview, gosh, I guess like 200 artists, the thing you see is there's some healing that can happen from showing it, even if someone doesn't latch onto it extensively. Because it lets you, like you talked about, you had to make that record so you could move on.
Right.
So how many people go through life and they don't have that outlet so they can move on?
A ton.
Yeah.
A ton. I mean, and then the cycle repeats.
Yeah, then you just,
because then you say, oh, well, now it's my job to write this song for that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then it's just, but like, okay, great example. There was some stuff on like American Son. American Son is an entire record about honestly my dad passing, and then also I had three friends commit suicide in that same year. So it's about mental health and like dealing with all this shit. And it's a little bit of a personal guide as well for myself that I wrote of like, okay, here are the things that you're feeling, here are the outs, here are the things. But like, yeah, maybe not every single song on that record. I mean, that record wasn't a number one. It did top out at 16, which was great. It was a great record for me. But it is one of those records where if I don't put that out, then Scare of the Dark isn't out. If Scare of the Dark isn't out, then I don't have... I would have lost some fans, is what I'm trying to say in like a nice way. The amount of times that that song comes up at the merch table or in the DMs, you know, whether or not it's like a huge hit for me or not, it has done what it needed to do. So yeah. There's like always the takeaway of, okay, I've always said this. If I write a song and one person hears it and only one person hears it and it dramatically impacts that person, that one person, it's worth it.
Yeah.
That's
a great song
art
too.
Art in general, you know? Yeah. Yep. No, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a hard part too about where we're at musically is in this world, this landscape of single. No cohesion to that. Honestly, most of the time for the majority of artists, right?
Yeah.
You feel like you are a album guy.
Yeah.
And I think with albums, you can explore.
True.
I feel like it's harder to explore in 3 minutes than it is in 45.
Absolutely. And it's so like, I struggle with this as well. I try to be as up to date within the industry as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I know that the way that I like to do things is essentially phasing its way out. It is already halfway through the door. I would love to say that it's going to come back, but in order for it to come back, I mean, it would have to be a monumental change in not only culture, but just the way that the whole thing works.
You mean like doing like full albums being a thing versus singles, or
yeah.
What do you mean specifically?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, like mm-hmm. I mean, there's many things besides just the singles and the albums, but we'll use this as an example. Everybody knows that if you put out singles every 2 weeks, the algorithm picks that up and they like that and you get more.
2 weeks?
Every 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. Yeah.
It just depends.
If you can do it every 2 weeks, the algorithm loves it. That is also why AI music is undoubtedly like crushing in that space, is because they can make a song a day. Pollution and saturation is kind of the thing right now. That's like what the whole algorithm is rewarding. And so, but I do think it's hard to like, I just don't know if it's that good for the consumer's brain to train them to say like, yeah, you're right. Like whatever the fan demand is, that's exactly what is the right answer. I think that's very tough for artists.
Totally.
Yeah, I do personally. And you know, like I've also said this, like artists don't need a ton more benefits than they already get, right? I mean, it's a artist world. And so I don't want to sit here and be like this huge advocate for that, but I do think that that is a huge problem. I think it's super hard on the artist's headspace. I think it's hard on creative to essentially say like, well, can you keep up with this computer?
It's
super hard. And I think albums give the artist also a space to say, here's a complete collection of the thoughts that I have and the feelings and the emotion that I've experienced. And here's this little thing. Kind of a segue for the record I just made, this new thing that we're going into. The songs are pretty short. It's 10 songs and they're all like around or under 3 minutes. So it's a very short record.
Digestible.
Trying to play into the attention span of the modern world instead of trying to fight it and put a lot of songs that are long. I think that Even like, is anyone tired of 2.5 hour movies?
Bro, I can't watch movies anymore.
And they're so long.
My brain's broken.
Which at first, I think when they started during COVID, it was like, oh man, this is sick. Like I can burn 3 hours. But now I'm like, dude, come on. Like let's go back to hour and a half, 90 minute movies.
Yeah, my brain's broken for long things. Like,
yeah.
See, I feel if I like the like universe, you know what I mean? It's like, I just want to live in it forever sometimes.
And I get that. Like Lord of the Rings, I have no problem watching the extendeds.
Yeah.
None at all. I could sit down 12 hours on my ass just...
I've done it with you.
Yeah, just... Yeah. just binging, and I love it. But I don't know. Like, there are things like this. Like, I think short songs. There are only... The reason why songs are 3 minutes is because that's an advertising space on radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's why songs are around that three-minute mark. But we are obviously seeing that shorter songs also are doing fine because really the length of the song doesn't matter as much when you're looking for a 30-second segment, right? So like there are pieces of this new space that I understand and that I'm willing to play into, you know, like, and it's, I don't know what the release cycle is for this next thing yet, but we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah.
Me too, honestly. And like one of the things, and we talked about this a little bit before, probably on the last podcast, but you guys have a great live full band show.
Thank you.
Right. And it's super entertaining. I loved getting to see you in Ocean City, and it was pretty early in the day, and you guys had a great crowd when it started, but as your set went on, the crowd got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And for me at a festival, that says so much because one, that means people that are there are not leaving.
Right.
And not only that, but other people are hearing or seeing what's going on. And okay, instead of getting this beer, I'm going to go do this. Or instead of go riding that Ferris wheel, I'm going to go do this.
Yeah, man. The festival circuit this year for us was, I'm just super thankful for it because we got to play some of my favorite festivals, and some of them was actually their last year.
A lot of festivals are closing, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a totally different deal.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I would say club shows are worse than festivals at this point.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also a totally different thing. But yeah, that's, I mean, don't get me started on that. We'll be here for 4 hours. but yeah, like when we played Farewell Fest, we had 7,000 people at a 115 slot. So like.
That's sick as fuck.
Sorry, was that you?
I don't know if that was.
It was probably the water machine.
Sorry, that was... Anyway, but yeah, so like these 115 slots that we're getting, they've been super gracious to us. And like we're seeing that. And that makes me feel good. Like obviously as an artist, you know that you're going in, you're like, okay, we're going to play the 1 o'clock slot, see how it goes. And they don't always go well, but probably 5 or 6 of them this year, I was like really like, whoa, okay. This seems to be doing something.
Fuck yeah.
I love that. And that's the thing that I think is like the cool part about a festival. Is, I mean, you've been lucky enough to also play stadium shows. So just having that grandiose scale gives you the ability to show and prove.
Totally.
Whereas like a club show, if you're touring club shows, you're the ticket sales. Sometimes you get 200 people there.
Absolutely.
So you're going to show and prove to those 200. But if you can show and prove to 7,000.
Exactly.
Then you have just a bigger shot of acquisition of fans.
Well, and it's, yeah, it is interesting because, like, I don't know, man. I mean, when we go play these festivals, I'm like, well, I don't know how many fans we have versus how many people are there, mm-hmm. right? It's like always like the weird dichotomy of it, I guess. But like at Farewell, I would say the majority. I mean, I could hear it through my ears of people singing it back, you know. So it was like, all right, this is a fan base.
Yeah.
However, this is living at 1:15 in the afternoon, but this is where it is.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think I do. Once again, man, it's so funny. And I bet if we went back and listened to all the podcasts that we've done, we've probably talked about something similar in this vein multiple times. And I bet my answer at all three times is going to be different. But my thing now is it's so interesting after 3 years of playing these shows and going around doing stadiums and doing arenas and everything that we've been able to be a part of, to then also watch it kind of play through with the festival circuit. It's a lot to take in and not a lot of time of like trying to figure out where you want to go. there's pieces of the music industry that move way faster than I can.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think playing catch up's the wrong word, but you're learning. It is so much about learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, it feels like all the artists say that making the songs for you works the best.
Mm-hmm.
But also making the live set for the fans works the best.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
You know? So then it's like, how do you take those two things and kind of mash them together?
Yeah, it's actually, I don't know. I'm a big believer in Nugs. I think that's like a good platform.
What are we talking about? We talking about chicken or weed or what?
No, it's a streaming platform.
Yeah, Nugs is a streaming platform.
I've literally never heard of it before.
Okay, so it was originally made for like jam bands, but it's you just upload live shows to it. So you listen to whole sets of artists and whatnot. And also probably the first time that this will come out, but we are joining Nugs this year.
Sick.
And the thing that love about it, and I'm a big fan of this platform, I listen to it all the time, is just the fact that it connects those two things.
Yeah.
You all of a sudden can go and listen. If you like the live show better, for example, you can go listen to it.
Yeah.
And then that makes you want to go. I also think the discovery of like the whole like jam band thing, that's some of the most religious fan bases in the world. And being able to be, I mean, because we're not a jam band. We're also not really a rock band. And we're not really a country band. We're like all three of these things. We live somewhere in the minutia of all those things. Mm-hmm. We probably jam more than other bands, but we're not a jam band, right? But being able to put our stuff on there and say like, this is a unique thing that doesn't really exist on here. A country, rock, jam adjacent songwriter band.
Yeah.
Here it is. Is it cool? I don't fucking know.
So but is it audio only or is there video too?
Audio only, but they do special videos for special shows.
Okay.
So, and we've recorded every show for the last 3 years. So we have like 170 shows.
Oh, cool. I think this show was recorded.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I remember listening back to when I played with you guys opening for 49 at Basement East.
Yeah.
Listening to that.
I think. Yeah, I mean, and then like trying to decide, I mean, I don't know, but yeah, we have all these pre-recorded shows and then we're figuring out which ones we want to put out there and whatnot, but I don't know.
And how long do they live on that service?
Forever.
In perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a subscription base. They pay per listen. They pay a lot better than Spotify, too.
Well.
Very cool. That's inspiring.
That's a thing that is probably a little more niche than Spotify, of course.
Yeah.
But I also think that that's the kind of thing that can let people become from regular fan to super fan.
It reminds me of when Spotify came out, the thing that made Spotify so sick. It was such a service to the super fan.
Mm-hmm.
Spotify now is a service to the super fan as well as your passive consumer.
Yeah.
But Nugs feels like a place. It is the most active consumers.
Yeah.
It is like, dude, we buy the merch. Mm-hmm. We go to the shows. We listen to the records. We do everything.
And that's a good place probably if you're going to put some ad dollars down, you're going to hit some really fans that are really into like helping you out sell 40 records or whatever it is too.
It's also just a great place to find fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how I remember like when I very first got Spotify, people were like, I'm not going to get Spotify. I have Pandora. And it's like, okay, fine. But like, I want to listen to all these records. I want to listen to every record ever made. That's what Spotify gave me the ability to do. And I feel like Nugs is a very similar thing. And that is something I hope Nugs is kind of a future thing. I hope that is like something that gains in a lot of popularity.
Yeah. Instead of every record ever made, it's every live show ever made.
Right. Which can also be a little bit much, but
yeah, but you can. The cool thing about it is, hey, I was at this show. I want to go relive it.
Absolutely. And there's also shows, like I've found this as just being a consumer through Nugs, of like, I've listened to so many shows of my favorite artists that are on there. And I'll be like, oh, this one in Minnesota is the best. That's, you know, like it's a lot of the same
Pearl Jam
set.
Stuff was.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a lot of the same sets. They're playing, you know, different songs in the sets. But you're like, man, this 20-minute run in this set is unbeatable. Like, I love this string of things. And like, it's because it is different every night. And when you get to actually listen to it through headphones and you're not like, you know, you don't get like that experience of actually being at a live show, but you get to listen to it and experience it in a completely different way. I think it's great.
I agree.
Well, shit. I'm all nugged up. I'm ready. I'm going to go check it out.
What are your hopes for Colby Acuff in 2026?
I was just about to ask that. What are you looking forward to?
I mean, dude, the thing that makes me so excited is I feel like I'm doing something interesting again, which I love. And I hope, I hope that other people think it's interesting too. I hope it connects. And I also kind of hope some people, you know, it disconnects with some people. I think something that's in a way like controversial is the wrong word, but something that's like debatable or controversial is usually fairly exciting for everybody. So, and I'm fine to be that
person. Stir the pot musically a little bit.
And I'm totally fine to be that person. I feel like that's kind of always been the thing that's actually been the most beneficial for me.
Well, hell yeah. You don't know when this record's, the new record's coming out, of course, or the title, which you won't tell us right now.
No. This is all exclusive.
Okay. Well, you did just release a record that people need to go listen to.
Correct.
So we're stoked on that. Are we stoked on Finn and Feather? Have you got new episodes coming out?
Yeah. So Finn and Feather was a little side project that I decided to do this year. It revolves around fly fishing and duck hunting, my two other passions in life. And we got really lucky, actually, with some great sponsors that came on early.
Like who?
Like Duck Camp, Extra Tough Boots, Onyx, Trout Routes. We got some Costa sunglasses, which was great.
I'm a blue water guy, but I respect it.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Dometic coolers, Migra shotgun shells came on. Probably forgetting some others, but we had really Duck Camp was the first people that reached out to us, and they wanted to sponsor the music, and then that kind of sparked this idea of maybe I could actually give back to the community that I started in, my first two loves. And so we've been releasing about one a month pretty steadily.
And these are on YouTube.
They're
videos.
On my YouTube, yeah.
Colby Acuff YouTube, Finn and Feather, documentary style, outdoorsman, conservatory hunting stuff.
Conservation. Yeah.
Kurt doesn't know. He doesn't know meat good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all good. It's all good. Bean boy.
I have watched them, though, so yeah. I would say that you get, you know, it's like you get to learn about where you're hunting or fishing, about what's going on there, what could be better, what could be worse. And then also it's like getting to know the people that are working these places is cool.
Yeah. I mean, and I think when I was a guide and when I was a kid, really, we'd watch all these like outdoor series on YouTube. And there's always a host, and the host is like, anyway, this is what I think about this. I mean, they're just getting the knowledge a lot of the times from the guide, and they don't really feature the guide as much, which is fine. I mean, that was the way that shows were kind of tailored. I wanted to make a show that the star was the guide or the outfitter, and then I was just the client in like a secondary, I'm a support character, which, you know, once again, it's a passion project. It's a thing of love. We did a ton of them the first year. So those are able to go watch. We're in the middle of filming all the duck hunting ones right now. But then probably after this, we're going to do maybe a couple a year and trickle them in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Last night I was playing Cabela's Most Dangerous Game 2 or
That's
something.
A great game.
Oh, it was playing it on a GameCube controller and not like the actual gun. It's horrible. You can't. It was just so unfun. But the game starts like, let's go shoot some bottles to see what you got. And then this saber-toothed tiger comes over and you blast it in the face like a shotgun, like a foot away. It's so funny.
Virtual killing animals.
Oh, dude.
For Kurt, not in reality.
Yeah. It was without having the gun, it's just not fun. But very cool. Well, I think the Finn and Feather thing is very unique. I don't know anyone else in the country music scene that's doing anything like that at all. So I think that if you're listening to this, it's definitely worth going to check out, especially if you like hunting, fishing, and loving every day.
Yeah, no, I think it's just, it's something that I want to do to give back. And it's, I also, you know, Ben.
Let's give a shout out to Ben.
Ben has done such a phenomenal job with.
He's grown up too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the footage is phenomenal.
Yeah, he's got him some anamorphic lenses, and everything's shot really well too.
Yeah, he is very, very talented.
He's, but I think that's about it. But let's talk about. Do you have some tour dates or anything coming up? You say going out in March, right?
Yeah, we'll have a tour announcing here pretty soon. Probably by the time this comes out, it'll be announced, I would imagine.
Just announce it right now.
So we'll be going on a spring headline tour, and then we're still working on summer, and then I got some fun stuff planned for the fall.
Secret stuff.
Secret.
Okay.
But all definitely expect a spring headline tour.
United States of America?
USA, yes, sir.
Tom's.
Uncle Tom's Cavern. All right. Well, I think that's about it. Right? We got anything else we need to cover?
Nope. Thanks for being on here, brother. Thanks for being a friend of not only us, but the Raise Rowdy family.
Of course.
And thanks for not being super mad that we didn't get the video from the last podcast.
Dude, you know me. I'm pretty chill.
Yeah, we
appreciate
it.
I appreciate you guys for having me on.
Love you, Colby. Brother. See you at the house.
Love you, boys.
Okay, guys. Thank you for listening to the Raise Rowdy podcast. Go follow Colby Acuff for sure. Go check out Finn and Feather. It's different. It's cool. Ducks and fish and stuff. Those are great. And that's all we got.
That's it. Cheers, beers, and Happy New Year.
All right. Bye.